Welcome to the Birthful Podcast. I'm Adriana Losada, and today's story is with April Teal, who has had two unmedicated vaginal births, one at a freestanding birth center in Southern California and the other at a hospital in North Dakota. Independently of birth setting, the biggest difference in these experiences came down to the pushing stage, with one being actively managed and the other being completely directed by her body, allowing her to experience the fetal ejection reflex. Stay tuned. This episode of Birthful is brought to you by Third Love, creating insanely comfortable bras with a 60-day perfect fit guarantee. Go to thirdlove.com/birthful to find your perfect fitting bra and get 15% off your first purchase. This episode of Birthful is also brought to you by Myro, the refillable, non-toxic, hard-working, long-lasting, and plant-powered deodorant that looks as good as it smells. Get 50% off your first order today. Visit mymyro.com/birthful and use promo code Birthful. The Birthful Podcast, talking to maternity pros and new parents to inform your intuition. Hello, mighty parents and parents-to-be. As always, thank you so much for all the love you give the show, for sharing the episodes you enjoy on your Instagram feed, and also with your friends and anybody, you know, people in the streets. I really appreciate it. If what you hear is helpful, make sure to subscribe so you don't miss a thing. And if you want to support the podcast, there are three ways you can do that. One is by supporting its sponsors, which in this week's case are Myro and Third Love. Another is by signing up for my Thrive With Your Newborn online post and preparation classes, which not only allow you to support what I do, but also helps you get postpartum ready. And you can sign up for that at birthfulcourses.com. And do make sure you take those classes before the baby is born, before baby arrives. And the third way is by joining the official Birthful community at patreon.com/birthful. I will be incredibly grateful for your support, and you will also have access to ad-free episodes and extra content for each show, as well as bonus discussions on other topics. And for example, recently we were talking about why you would want to delay your baby's first bath and for how long, and options of when to bathe your baby after you go home. For this episode in particular, there's also extra audio content where April shares that she is pregnant again and all the things that she is doing differently for her upcoming third birth, including why she's planning a home birth. So if you want to check that out, find out more and join the Birthful community at patreon.com/birthful. Oh, and I have a special announcement for doulas and birth professionals in LA. I am going to be out on towards your neck of the woods teaching a full day workshop on rethinking prenatals to support physiology and promote birth ownership on Saturday, May 4th. You can find out more about that at beaniebirth.com under the tab for doulas and birth professionals. I am so looking forward to spending the day together. So yeah, if you want to join me, go check it out at beaniebirth.com. And May the 4th, what better day than Star Wars Day to be there together learning about birth physiology? All right, enough about that. Here is my talk with April. Welcome, April. It's so great to have you here.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited.
Yeah. And before we get started with your birth story, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Well, my name's April. I have been married to my husband, Ryan, for almost 6 years. We have a 3.5-year-old boy and a 14-month, almost 15-month little boy. We are a military family, and we are currently living in North Dakota.
Very cool. And so since this was your second birth, I'm guessing we're doing a little bit of contrast and comparison over the first one?
Yeah, I kind of thought I would share them both, actually. They're quite similar but different. My first was an out-of-hospital at a birth center, and my second was actually in a hospital. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Let's go back to, you know, back several years to when you were first pregnant, and what were your thoughts and approach to birth then?
Yeah. Well, my mother had two daughters, both naturally without any pain medication. And so I grew up with that kind of always thinking I would want the same and do the same. But truthfully, I knew nothing about birth. And it was probably a little bit of a silly motivation for me, but I was more competitive with myself and just thinking, oh, I can do this, you know, but not really knowing anything about birth. And so I got pregnant, and my friend had had a water birth recently, and she had had a great experience. So it was just more motivation to continue down that path. And she gave me a couple resources, which was great. But if I can just back up for a second, when I first found out I was pregnant, it was kind of interesting because I had come off the pill about 6 months before we wanted to try, and I just was trying to regulate my cycles. I typically kind of have longer cycles, around 32 days or so. And so the first month that we were going to start trying, I had the little ovulation test strips, and they weren't coming out positive. I kept taking them, and they weren't positive, and I just figured there was something wrong with them. You know, they were just cheap little tests. And so the time came when I thought my period would come, and it didn't. And so I kept taking pregnancy tests pretty much every day, but they were negative and negative. And about, I want to say roughly 2 weeks after my period should have started, it was finally positive. And I was shocked. And I really thought that maybe my cycle was just delayed because of coming off of the pill and all and whatnot. So I was just very surprised and very excited. And so, but when I was calculating my due date based on my last menstrual period, I just felt like it was wrong. You know, I thought there's no way I'm already 6 weeks pregnant or whatever. And so I made an appointment with my regular doctor, and she actually ordered an early ultrasound to make sure the pregnancy wasn't ectopic. And I'm so glad that I had that ultrasound, because when the lady who did the ultrasound told me that I was only like around, by the time I had this, you know, it was a couple weeks after my positive pregnancy test, and she said I was only around 5 weeks pregnant, it made a lot more sense to me, like, you know, as to when I got those positive tests. And it changed my due date by a whole 2 weeks by going off of the ultrasound instead of my last menstrual period. And so I was very glad that I had that, because I feel like it could have really impacted the end of my pregnancy depending on which care provider I had, you know, and being maybe pressured to be induced or whatnot.
Right, because it made it so that your due date became 2 weeks later.
Right, yeah, I was due July 28th instead of July 14th. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it made a big difference. And so, I think it's so important to try to get the most accurate date that you can get.
Yeah, even though they don't mean anything. No, anyways.
Right. Yeah, I mean, babies have a, you know, big window of when they're born, obviously. But
well, and especially depending, and because we, the way the due dates are calculated is just doing a one size fits all exactly. Cycle length. And as you were clearly saying, we have different
right
lengths,
exactly.
Right?
So I really think I ovulated just really late in that cycle, and my body was probably still just coming off of the pill and whatnot. But I think that's why I wasn't getting the positive on the ovulation test strips, because I just wasn't timing it all right, and I ovulated a lot later than I thought I was going to. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So then you prepared. So you had a birth philosophy of trying to do things unmedicated, and you had your friend who had a water birth. How then did you prepare? What things did you set up?
Yeah. So I watched The Business of Being Born. I ordered a couple of Ina May's books, her Guide to Childbirth, and Birth Matters is another one that I really like. And I I just scheduled an appointment with an OB. Honestly, I just didn't really know what to do. Where we were living at the time, there was only one hospital. And I went and toured it with my husband when I was only like 15 weeks pregnant, which was pretty funny because everybody else on the tour was, you know, in their third trimester and I didn't even look pregnant yet. But I didn't love the vibe I was getting and I wanted something more. And so I just was looking in our area and I didn't have a lot of options, but I did find a birth center it's like a 45-minute drive without traffic. So I found a birth center, a freestanding birth center with a couple midwives. And I went there and I loved it. I loved my meeting with the midwife. I loved the whole feel of their care. And the rooms themselves were just beautiful. You know, they looked like hotel rooms and they had these big, beautiful tubs. And so I definitely wanted to do that. And it thankfully was not too difficult to convince my husband, even though it was going to end up being costly for us. We knew that we were going to have to pay out of pocket and then we weren't sure what our insurance would reimburse us. So then I'd had two appointments with the OB and I didn't have a good feeling during those appointments just because I never actually met her. I only met the nurse practitioner. And so that just didn't really sit right with me. But when I called, it was kind of interesting because when I called to just let them know that I was transferring care, the receptionist asked where I was going and I told her and she said, "Oh, good for you." And that was just kind of a little funny thing I'll never forget because it made me feel good about what I was doing. So.
Mm-hmm. And you wouldn't expect the receptionist to say that, right? It's like, what does she know?
Right? I know.
We don't know, right?
Exactly. That's exactly what I thought. Yeah. So I transferred care. I think I was around 16 or 18 weeks, something like that.
Mm-hmm. And then fast forward to the day of or close mm-hmm. to as leading up to the birth, how did you know things were happening?
Yeah, it was a Friday night and my husband and I were having a late dinner. It was around 8 o'clock. I was 39 weeks and 3 days and I started getting some period-like cramps. But at the time, I didn't really know what it was or what to think of it. And then we sat down and we started watching a movie and I noticed that the cramps were kind of coming in waves. So I thought, I'm just going to sit here and time these while we watch the movie. And by about 11:30, our movie was over and I thought this could be it. Like these are coming every 12 minutes or so, not painful, but they definitely had my attention. And yeah. So I called my midwife and I told her and she said, "Well, it's very important you get some rest." That was one of the things that she really emphasized a lot during my prenatal care was, you know, first-time moms typically have long labors. It's so important to rest, especially if you go into labor at night. And she asked me if she thought I could sleep through it. And I said, "No, I really don't think I can." And so she told me I could take 50 milligrams of Benadryl, which I did. And I'm so grateful that I did. I really think it made a big impact in my birth because I was able to get some sleep off and on for like the next 6 hours.
That is huge.
Yeah. Very big. So, I mean, I would wake for the contractions, but then I would just fall right back asleep. Yeah. So I did that until about 5:30 in the morning. And then at that point, it was just getting too difficult and too uncomfortable to sleep. So I got up and I started laboring at home and, I called my mom. She was a 6 hour drive from me, about 7 hours to the birth center. And the plan was for her to meet my mother-in-law and they were going to drive down together. So I said, "I think it's happening. You need to come." So
exciting for them. Yeah. So they were on their way and you were just hanging out laboring. What was helpful to you during that kind of early time?
Yeah. Water, the tub. We had a really nice bathtub in this house. And I got out. I did lots of things. I tried laying down on the bed. I had read the Bradley Method book, and I had tried doing some of the positions that they recommend. But to be honest, I hated them. I did some birth ball stuff, but I mostly was in the tub. It just felt really good. Yeah. And then I lost my mucus plug around, I want to say it was around 8 in the morning. And we called my midwife and let her know. And at this point, I was really ready to leave. I don't remember at this point how far apart they were, but they were very strong and intense, you know, lasting a minute. And I just felt like I gotta go. but she was like, no, I think you can wait another hour. And so, so she said, call me back in an hour. And I was a little devastated, but that's what we did. So, so we left for the birth center around 9 in the morning. And then,
so then when you called her back, she was like, okay, you sound different right now. Come, was it?
Yeah, you know, in hindsight, she told me later, she thought I was going to come in still kind of in early labor. I think she was a little reluctant to have me come, but I mean, we had called her a few times at this point, and I was really wanting to come. So I think she was just like, sure, you can come. I don't know my husband did most of the talking with her. I did talk with her through a couple of contractions because I know, you know, that's kind of how they assess how you're doing. But I don't know if I was just handling it well or I just wasn't conveying how intense it was. But yeah, like she didn't think I was going to be as far along as I actually was when we got there.
Okay. And before you tell us that, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll find out how far along you were. We'll be right back. Finding a bra that fits has always been a pain for me. The truth is, my breasts are not very big, so during the perky 20s, I never even bothered wearing a bra. But after going through pregnancy, that was no longer something I felt comfortable doing, and so began my quest for a bra that was comfortable, fit well, and frankly, wasn't classified as a training bra. When I heard that Third Love offers more than 70 sizes, including their signature half cup sizes, I was optimistic. One of the things Third Love does to help you find the perfect fit is that they have an online fit finder quiz, which I did take, and that helped me find my suggested size in less than a minute. I did appreciate that they asked questions not only about the size, but also about breast shape, because both things matter. I placed my order, and once I got my bra, it was super soft, comfortable, gorgeous, but the cup size wasn't quite right. Now, since Third Love has a 60-day, 100% fit guarantee, I quickly reached out to their team of expert fit stylists, and after a few questions, they emailed me a return label and soon shipped out a new bra for free. It was a super simple process. I just gave him a call, but fit stylists are available every day, also via chat or text, so you can contact them however you prefer to communicate. My new Third Love bra is set to arrive this week, and I cannot wait to put it on. And with their 100% fit guarantee, you have 60 days to wear their bra, wash it, put it to the test, and if you don't love it, return it, and Third Love will wash it and donate it to a person in need. Oh, and they also have some lovely wireless nursing bras so you can be comfortable and have the right fit, even when you breastfeed. Third Love knows there's a perfect bra for everyone, so right now they are offering Birthful listeners 15% off your first order. Go to thirdlove.com/birthful now to find your perfect fitting bra and get 15% off your first purchase. That's thirdlove.com/birthful for 15% off today. And we're back talking with April Teal about her birth stories. So you drove to the birth center. Got there, got checked. How far along were you?
I was fully dilated.
Check you out. My goodness.
I was so relieved. It was the greatest thing I'd ever heard. So yeah, we parked and I pretty much just bolted into the room and started stripping because I wanted to get into the tub there. And so she checked me right away and yeah, she was pretty surprised too. It was a welcome feeling. But then the real work set in. I had a really hard time pushing this baby out. So,
okay.
Yeah, we got there around 11. And she asked me if I had the urge to push or any pressure in my bottom. And I had a little pressure, but no urge at all. And so she just kind of told me to go ahead and keep laboring and, you know, listen to my body and do what I needed to do. And so I kind of pushed, but I didn't really know what I was doing or I just didn't really have an urge. And then a little over an hour later, a second midwife showed up because they work in twos. And I continued pushing. I think they said, according to their records, that I really started pushing and things got serious at about 11:15 or so. So I pushed in the tub there until about 12 and then they had me move to the bed and I just alternated sides. So I would lay on one side and then during a contraction, lift my knees up to my chest and push. And then in between contractions, I would put my legs out and put the top of my leg, like the leg that was facing out on the midwife's shoulder and just rest and then do it again. And then we'd switch sides every so often. And I did that for 2 hours and he was finally born at 1:51 PM. So it was a good, like 3-ish hours of pushing. It was just really, yeah, it was hard because I never really felt him in the birth canal. I felt like I was pushing into nothing, if that makes sense. Like I felt like I was pushing and exerting all this energy into the contractions. And that really, it was not very motivating. And my water didn't break until about the last 5 minutes. And when my water finally broke is when I could feel him and I was super motivated to get him out. It felt so good.
Yeah, so you had that's part of what that amniotic fluid does. It cushions a bit, right? So that cushioning, once it's gone, then you feel not like this water balloon, but hard bone on you.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it was interesting because for a long time I just was trying to figure out, well, was it because my water was still intact that I had such a hard time pushing, or was it truly, I mean, just first time mom, or, you know, why? But the birth of my second son was like so similar yet so different that I can't really blame it on the waters anymore, I don't think.
Well, okay. So let's start to change, like, let's wrap this one up and then switch gears to the other one. And then we can talk more about the pushing and see what the thoughts are there.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so we stayed at the birth center for, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so baby came out with, did he go right to your chest? Did like, what was that like meeting your baby?
Oh, it was just the best. It was like the best afterbirth hormonal high I've ever experienced. He came right to my chest. He was a great size. He was 7 pounds, 12 ounces, 20 inches long. He cried right away. And yeah, he was on my, we did skin to skin for like an hour. My placenta came out relatively quickly. I want to say within 5 to 10 minutes after he was born. And they just put it in a bowl and then put the bowl right up next to me. And we just stayed like that for about an hour and he nursed. And my mom and my mother-in-law had arrived, and when they heard him crying, they came into the room. And then after a while, I wasn't really expecting them to come in right away. So after, you know, everyone had kind of all calmed down and settled a little bit, I actually did ask them to leave and go get me some food because I was starving.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Give him a test. Give him a test.
Right. Yeah. So they went and got me a sandwich at Starbucks. And to this day, I remember how delicious it was because I was just so hungry. But yeah.
Cool. That sounds lovely. That sounds like, you know, the hardest part was maybe that pushing stage, but the leading up to it seems like you were handling it quite well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, even tricking your midwife.
I know. Yeah.
So then fast forward to your next pregnancy. Did you do anything different the second time around when preparing and considering what your wishes were?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was a whole different preparation because we had moved between the two pregnancies. So the birth center was no longer an option, and we had moved to North Dakota, and my choices were even more limited where we were at. And we briefly discussed a home birth, but we weren't really comfortable with it for a couple reasons. One was the midwife lived over an hour away. The biggest one was that I was due in December in North Dakota, which, you know, our winters are pretty rough. And yeah, I was due December 26th. No, excuse me. He was born December 26th. I was due December 23rd. And I was also concerned about my care provider taking off for the holidays, like taking some time off. And so we decided on a hospital birth. There's one hospital where we live. And this time I knew I wanted a doula because even though I didn't have one with my first, a hospital felt very foreign and, you know, uncharted territory for me. So I did some research, and there's a doula where we live who has a ton of experience. She's been doing it for about 14 years. And she's actually training to be a CPM, a midwife. Mm-hmm. And I met her. Yeah, I met her, and she's just really sweet. And we clicked right away, and I knew I wanted to hire her. And so when I was telling her my fears about it was so important to me to have the care provider that I had had all my prenatal care with actually be there for the birth, right? That's what I had with my first son, Lincoln. And I wanted to have that assurance again. And with the standard model of care, if you go the obstetrician route, a lot of times, you know, you just get who's on call. And I was just really nervous about that. And so I was telling her that, and she said, well, there's a doctor in town who's actually a family practice doctor, but he also delivers babies. And he himself has a large family, and so he tends to stay in town during the holidays. He doesn't travel a lot. And he will be on call for you because he doesn't have like a very big you know, he doesn't have like a lot of maternity patients.
Yeah, I find that with family doctors, that's usually the case because it's not their own, you know, pregnant people aren't their only patients. That's just one little part of it.
Right. Yeah. And I had never even thought of that. So at the time I had already decided I was going to go to this one OB that some of my friends had recommended. And I still think he would be a great choice, but he works, you know, that's his main job. And so if he's not on call or if it's not during normal business hours, he wouldn't be there. And so when this my doula told me this, I thought, oh, I'm definitely going to interview him and have an appointment with him. So I did that right away, and he was great. He was very supportive of everything that I wanted. I wanted to do another unmedicated birth. And of course, I went in with, you know, a ton of questions like, can I push in any position? I don't want to have electronic fetal monitoring. I just want to have a Doppler. I didn't want to have, you know, an IV or anything. And so he was very supportive of everything, and it was really very reassuring and nice. The only thing that he wanted was for me to have an IV port. So just have like the little, what did they, like a hep lock, I think they call that. Yeah.
Yeah, the heparin lock, the hep locks, yeah.
Yeah. So he just wanted me to have that just in case of an emergency. And I thought, fine, like that's not going to be the end of the world. So, yeah. So I, so that is how we decided to proceed. I was going to have a hospital birth with him, and I hired a doula, and she was great.
And so that definitely helped your fears of you know, not having that care provider that you connected with present during the birth. So how amazing that that worked out. What about, did, what other fears did you have, or did you have any other fears?
Well, initially during, when I first got pregnant, I was a little scared to just give birth again without, you know, any pain medication, because although I loved my first experience, it was a lot of hard work. And I was a little afraid to go through the pushing again. And I had heard that second babies tend to come out a little easier. So I was just kind of hoping for that. But once I, as the pregnancy progressed, I got more and more excited, and I reread Ina May's book, and I read Mindful Birthing, which was pretty helpful. Just kind of get into a good mindset. Trying to think of anything else I did. Oh, you know, I took collagen powder this pregnancy, which was I feel like it was very helpful. So just to back up with my first pregnancy, I had a great pregnancy. I loved being pregnant, but I did develop SPD around 21 weeks.
Can you explain? So that, yeah, can you explain a little bit more what that is?
Yeah, it's symphysis pubis dysfunction, I think is what it stands for. And it's basically pelvic pain. Yeah, it's like this really intense pain down in your pelvic region. I was running, and one day I went out for a run. It just, it felt like it came on overnight, and it just would stop me dead in my tracks.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is that the pubic bone in the front is not solid. There's a little, it's the two pieces come together, but there's ligaments in between. So it's not solid. And when you have relaxin coursing through your body, you know, it makes you all wobbly and everything's like more flexible. And so, I mean, that bone right there purposely is separated so that there's more flexibility. And if the baby needs it, things can stretch to give more space. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if it starts stretching and separating ahead of time on a consistent basis, then you get what is this SDP, is SPD, which is super annoying.
Yes. Yes, it is. I didn't have it terribly. Like, I could still walk fine. I've heard of some women that, you know, can't even have a hard time walking, but I definitely couldn't run anymore. And it was very annoying. And I had it even after he was born for like about a month, I want to say. Yeah.
So, did you do any body work for it?
No, I mean, I had chiropractic care, but yeah, I didn't do anything, any specific, like, I don't even stretches or anything.
Did you find that the chiropractic care helped?
It's hard to say. I never went into my appointments super uncomfortable, so I left feeling good, but it's not like I felt that crummy going into them, you know?
Gotcha.
But yeah, but I was grateful that my baby was always in a really good position. So I definitely wanted to continue and do chiropractic care the second time just to make sure, again, that this baby would be in a good position.
Yeah, and a lot of people say they – people who I know have had bad pubic symphysis pain, the chiropractic has been helpful. So it's one of those things that can – you know, it makes sense. You were saying, well, you weren't feeling so bad going into it, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So the other thing that I did the second time was I started taking collagen powder because I randomly came across it on the internet. Sometime I think around my first trimester, and you know, collagen's like good for joints and all that kind of stuff. And so I thought, oh, well, maybe it'll help me not get SPD this time. I can't say for sure, but I really think it did because I never got it. And they say if you've had it once, your chance of getting it again is higher, I believe, right?
Yeah, because the tendon or the ligaments in between have been stretched, so it's easier. Like anything, if you've stretched it once, it's easier for it to happen again. But I'll look more into this collagen powder thing. I'm curious for sure.
Yeah, I really do think it helped. I was able to comfortably still exercise and run all the way up until 32-ish weeks. And then it just got too uncomfortable with the big old belly, but it had nothing to do with any pelvic pain.
Cool.
Yeah.
And so before we get into the actual story, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll see how this baby was born. Raise your hand if you've tried a ridiculous amount of natural deodorants in search of the one without crappy ingredients that actually works. Yeah, I was part of that club until I tried Myro, and frankly, I was truly surprised with the great results. Myro's formula is hardworking, long-lasting, and with no toxic anything. 0% aluminum, 0% parabens, no irritating baking soda, and their ingredients are clinically tested for safety and efficacy. Plus, they make their natural deodorant with a custom and subtle blend of essential oils that release over time to keep you fresh, and a barley powder to keep you dry. So while it may not be gluten-free, Myro definitely does the trick. Here's how it works. You choose your scent and your case color, and then you get your first shipment. After that, you get a refresh delivery every 3 months, straight to your door and conveniently timed for when most people run out. And of course, you can switch scents, press pause, or stop anytime you want. Aside from the fact that it works, my other favorite thing about Myro is that it comes in a refillable case. This means that Myro refills reduce plastic waste by approximately 50% compared to typical drugstore deodorants. The case looks good, and the subtle essential oil scents are designed to elevate your mood because the people at Myro believe that doing good and feeling good should be an everyday thing, just like deodorant. Get 50% off your first order and get started today for just $5. Visit mymyro.com/birthful and use my promo code birthful. So to get 50% off your first order, meaning it's only $5, visit mymyro.com/birthful. So mymyro.com/birthful and use the code birthful on checkout. And we are back talking with April Teal about this time her second birth story. We did the first, now let's do the second.
Yeah. So this one, let's see. I was 39 weeks and my mom, we knew we were having another boy. My mom flew out to help. And right around the time that she flew out, maybe actually a couple days before, again, this is the middle of winter. I had come down with a cough and I didn't really think much of it. I was, you know, like, oh, this is a bummer. But so I was coughing for a couple days and then it started to get like really bad. And then it got extremely painful, like in my ribs. And I mean, I was brought to tears. It hurt so bad. I felt like my ribs were bruised or even broken. I didn't even know if that was a thing, but of course I was on the internet, you know, like, can you fracture your ribs from coughing too hard? Like, I don't know, but I had been coughing at this point for about a week. I was just over 39 weeks pregnant and it just hurt. I mean, I couldn't even like twist my torso without it hurting. It was just very, very painful. And I was really worried about the birth. I just felt like it was going to be in the way. And with my long pushing experience with my first, I thought, I just don't know if I can do this. And so, I mean, I'm sure I was also hormonal and very pregnant and just emotional about the whole thing, but it was really hard. And I was crying a lot because I just couldn't believe this was happening right before I was about to have a baby. So I went and saw my doctor, and he gave me some cough medicine to take at nighttime and to help me sleep, because I just wasn't sleeping. I had to sit upright in bed. And I mean, my husband and my mom were doing so many things to help me. I had essential oils. I had heating pads. I started taking Tylenol, which was a big deal for me because I generally try to avoid medication when I'm pregnant. But I just had to have some sort of pain relief from all of this coughing and the pain. So I was taking Tylenol, and they were just trying to keep, you know, my coughing at bay and keep me as comfortable as possible.
Did they ever figure out what it was? Did you have bronchitis or something like that?
They just said I had an upper respiratory infection. And so they actually did put me on antibiotics, which was something else I really didn't want to do. But again, at this point, I was so overwhelmed with what was happening that I needed it to go away. I had been in such a good headspace going into the birth, really excited about labor, really excited to have another baby. And then this just came out of nowhere, and it just felt like it was like taking all of my energy and my happy thoughts away. I just was very worried because, yeah, I was just uncomfortable all day long.
Yeah, no, that does not sound like fun at all. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, thanks. So, yeah, so I had the cough medicine, and I did go on the antibiotic, and I had a lot of family and friends praying for me that I wouldn't go into labor, which was kind of funny because before I came down with this, like I mentioned, my due date was December 23rd. And so I had wanted to have a baby before Christmas, especially because my first head came 3 days before my due date. I thought, oh, well, maybe this baby will come early too, you know? But no, when I came down with this upper respiratory infection and all the coughing, I was like, this baby needs to stay in. So, and thankfully he did. Christmas came and went, and I had had a lot of uterine activity this pregnancy. I had had Braxton Hicks with my first, but this time I just had a lot of Braxton Hicks, contractions, like I just felt a lot more going on down there for several weeks. So it wasn't really anything new, but Christmas came and went. I was still having like contractions, but not labor contractions. And Christmas Eve, we had gone shopping, and I lost a tiny bit of I don't think it was my plug, but just kind of some pretty thick discharge. And so I thought, oh, maybe things are starting. You know, that was really the only early sign that I had. And then the day after Christmas, I woke up at about 4:30 in the morning, and I had my first contraction. It was about 30, maybe 45 seconds long. And I just laid in bed, and I slept on and off for the next 2 hours. And then at 6:30, I was just too excited because I thought, oh, this could finally be it. So I got out of bed, and everybody was still sleeping. And I text my sister just to let her know today could be the day, because I just felt like I needed to tell somebody.
Right? You were like in that quietude all alone.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I let her know, and I just sat in our family room and kind of waited for the rest of the house to wake up. And I was timing them, and they were about 12 to 15 minutes apart at this point. You know, just really early labor contractions, but I was feeling good about them. And, but at the same time, I really didn't want to get overly excited. And because, you know, you hear all the time about contractions just completely stopping and you don't have the baby for days or whatever. So I just wanted to kind of go about my day as normal as possible. And my husband and my mom finally woke up and I told them I was having contractions, but don't get too excited, you know, like let's just keep going about our day. And I wanted to check out the after Christmas sales. So I thought, well, let's just go into town and run some errands and check out the sales. So we went into town around, I want to say 10 o'clock or 10 or 11. And we were shopping at Menards. I don't know if you've ever heard of a Menards.
I have no idea what that is. What is a Menards?
I didn't either until I moved to North Dakota, but it's basically just a really big like home improvement store. So yeah, so we were at Menards and I actually ran into my doctor, which was so funny. So I was like having full contractions about every 12 minutes apart and they were lasting a good minute and they were intense. Like I could not walk through them. I definitely had to stop, but because they were so far apart, I just didn't, you know, I just was kind of brushing it off. So I ran into my doctor and he was like, oh, I was wondering if I was going to see you anytime soon. And I kind of laughed and said, yeah, I'm having some activity, like maybe, you know, late tonight or tomorrow or something. So that was pretty funny.
Did he like, was he present for any of the contractions so he could see what was really going on?
Unfortunately, no. No, he wasn't. Yeah, so we said goodbye and it was pretty fun to have that my mom was there. So she got to meet him because she had heard me talk about him and how I liked him. And so that was neat. And then we went and had lunch at Panera and I had a couple really strong ones in Panera. And my husband looked at me and he was like, I think we need to just go home after this. And I really didn't want to, but I was like, okay, fine. So we drove home and he was like, I think you should get some rest. So I laid down in bed from 1:30 to 3:30 and I didn't sleep. But I just rested and would have my contractions still every 12 to 15 minutes apart and lasting a minute. And after about 2 hours, I was like, oh, I'm kind of done with this. So I decided to get up. I stood up and out of nowhere, they just got so – they started getting so close together. So within a half – like they dropped. All of a sudden I had one – 10 minutes and then 8 minutes and then 6 minutes. And within a half an hour, they were like 5 to 6 minutes apart from after that nap or nap resting. And I was like, whoa, like this is really picking up quick. So that was around 4 p.m.
And all this time I'm thinking in my head and you hadn't called your doula.
No, I know. I had told her I was in – I had texted her and told her I was having contractions, but I was like, it's so early. Like, I'll just let you know, later. And, yeah, thank you for reminding me. My plan was for her to come to our house, and I wanted – she was actually going to take pictures, too. She was also our, like, birth photographer. So she was going to take pictures of me laboring at home, and then we were going to drive to the hospital together, and, you know, I had this whole vision. But so I did text her and I was like, these are really starting to pick up. And she said, okay, well, I'm ready to come whenever you want. And I was like, well, I'm handling them so well. Like I'm walking and talking between them. I'm fine because I was kind of waiting for myself to get into labor land. Mm. And Because I was in labor land with my first for so long. And so I was like, nah, I don't need you till I'm in labor land. So I told her not to come. And then it only was about 5 minutes later. I was like, you know what? Actually, can you come? I was like, these are getting really close together. They were about 3 or 4 minutes apart at this point. And I thought, I'm having a hard time gauging this because it's just happening all so fast. And she was like, sure. So she was like, yes, I'm coming. But I did not calculate into my head that she's about a 45-minute drive.
Oh, and she was coming to your house.
Yes. Yeah. That is a tip of advice if you have a doula. I really think that you need to think about the little logistics about things like that, because I just didn't plan that into my, like, how I thought, you know, this was all going to happen. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So she gets in the car and she starts coming our direction. But I mean, it took her a little bit of time. It's not like she was ready to walk out the door the second I told her. So she is on her way, and let me think here. So my mom was distracting my 2.5-year-old at the time. I was just having kind of contractions all over the house. I'd have them like in the hallway. I would have them on my birth ball. And he came over and saw me have a couple on the birth ball, and his eyes got real big and he got a little scared. So that's when we decided to retreat to the bedroom, and so that he didn't have to see me. And so my husband and I went to our bedroom, and I was having some in there. And then we called my doula, and we just asked her how far away she was. And she was about 15 minutes. And she was like, about 15 minutes away. And I thought to myself, I don't know. I think I need to leave, because I started getting shaky and nauseous.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how far away were you from the hospital?
About 20, 25 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah. So I thought, I don't think we can wait. So we actually told her to turn around and just to meet us there at the hospital. So we walked out to the car. I gave my son a quick hug. It was kind of funny. I had been envisioning this sweet moment, you know, saying goodbye to my firstborn while I went off to have my second. And he was watching a movie and was so distracted. He was like, bye, Mom. Like,
yeah.
Oh, okay. Bye. So, yeah, my contractions were, I think they're about 3 minutes apart at this point. So we get in the car, and I had my labor playlist music going. And I honestly, I don't mind being in labor in the car. So I've done it now twice. I think I've gone through transition in the car twice now. And
that is your unique ability. That is your unique ability.
I don't know what it is. I just like, I sit in the seat, I buckle my seatbelt, I lean it back, and I enjoy just laying back and looking at the, I mean, it's dark at this point, looking at the, you know, headlights and the building lights, and just kind of being in my little zone, listening to my music. And yeah, so it was a nice drive, and intense, but nice. So
I'm glad it was nice. Yes.
Yeah. So we get to the hospital, and oh, my midwife, my doula, she was so great. She was waiting for us, and she went and parked our truck for us while my husband got our bags. And it was really nice not having to deal with that. And then she said, I'll meet you up in your room. And I was standing in the lobby while my husband was getting our bags, and I had one contraction, and I'll just never forget, there was an older gentleman watching me, and I was just going through this like super intense contraction. And I just kept thinking like, you know, why are you looking at me like, yes, I'm in labor.
I'm staring.
Yes. Yeah. And so my husband had called the hospital on the way there and told them that we were coming. And so they were prepared. And he did tell them at that point that my contractions were about 2 or 3 minutes apart, I think is what he told them. And they were totally ready for me. They let me in. And thankfully, I didn't have to walk far because it was so uncomfortable. But they had a room right there, not far down the hallway. And unfortunately, all of their rooms with tubs were unavailable. And I was really looking forward to getting into the tub, but they were not available. So I immediately went to plan B. And I just, again, there's something about when I'm in full on labor, I don't care. I just start taking off all my clothes and I want water relief immediately. So I headed straight for the shower, and there was a little nurse in there, young nurse, and she wanted to put the monitor on me. And I just said, you know, no, thank you. I would actually rather have a Doppler. And she looked a little confused and was like, okay, I'll go find one. So she leaves. And then that's when I got into the shower. And then my doula had met us up there at that point. And the rest, I mean, it just went so fast. And I, when I'm in labor, I really like to be, I guess, in kind of the all fours position. I had my head down on, they have a chair in the shower, and I was kneeling on the floor with my head down on the chair, and I was gripping the sides, and I stayed like that for a long time. And I would just bury my face into the bottom of this chair. And my husband would put water on my back or rub my back, or my doula would rub my back. Somebody was always there doing counter pressure and just making sure the water was on my back. And I asked for my music playlist in the bathroom. And yeah, so I stayed in the shower. Let me think here. So I was in the shower. I mean, there was nurses coming in and out of the room behind me, but at the time I was fully, this is when I was finally in labor land. I wasn't really aware of what was going on. But I do remember at one point somebody said, such and such nurse is going to check you. Is that okay? And I was grateful that they asked and didn't just do it. And so they checked me while I was down on this kind of all fours position in the shower. And she said, it's hard to tell. I think she's an 8 with a small lip. And moments before she had checked me, I distinctly remember this shift in the contractions where instead of trying to relax my body through them, like it was getting increasingly difficult to relax through them, I felt like I wanted to like push with them. And so I had gone through a couple contractions like that where I thought, well, instead of trying to relax, I'm going to just work with it. And I started to push and I thought, oh yes, this is what I want to do. This feels right. And so I was kind of doing that quietly on my own. And then she checked me and said I was 8 with a small lip, and my doula was crouched on the ground next to me. And I just remember looking over at her and I so quietly said, can I keep pushing? Like, I don't know if I can push with a lip. And she just looked at me and said, just listen to your body and do what your body wants to do. And I was like, okay, thank you. Because I just felt like I needed somebody to give me permission to keep doing what I felt like was right. So I did. I just kept pushing in the shower. And I lost my plug in there, my mucus plug. And then at one point, I remember hearing the nurses say, yeah, her doctor's not here yet. He's on his way, but the backup doctor is in the hallway. And I thought to myself, oh, if they're already talking about doctors, like I've got to be getting, you know, pretty close. And and then my doula looked at me and said, before you get your baby too far down, do you want to move to the bed? And I thought, oh, baby's coming. Okay. So I said yes, and I got up and I walked to the bed. They had the bed inclined, and I immediately got on, and I kind of got into that, like I threw my upper body over the back of it, and then there was a bar in the back, like near where the head is. And I grabbed the bar.
So it was like a supported hands and knees, kind of like you were on the chair in the bathroom, but
yeah.
On the bed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So I would grip the bar during contractions and then just kind of relax. And it probably sounds like all of that took a long time, but it didn't. I was only pushing for about 20, maybe 30 minutes, and he was born, and I had started pushing in the shower. And I think I was only on the bed for about 5 or 10 minutes before he was born. My doctor only got there about 5 or 10 minutes before he was born. He actually walked into the room, and I could kind of hear him, you know, gloving up and whatnot. And he said to me, he goes, I'm going to check you. And I just thought to myself, why are you going to check me? There's like no point. And then he like gets close and looks at me, and he's like, yeah, never mind. Like, we don't need to check you, like the baby.
Yeah, I see hair. What? There's no need to check.
Yeah. So yeah, that's how he was born. He was born behind me. It was really cool because my water did not break until his head was born in call. So he came out in the sack, his head did, and then it popped. And then the next contraction, he came all the way out. And they immediately put him under me. And it took me a second to register, you know, what had all happened. And they said, reach down, grab your baby. And so I sat back on my legs, my feet, and he was there between my legs. Yeah, it was great, and I just couldn't even believe it. And I looked up, and I looked over, and my doula was standing there with her camera, and I gave her this like kind of funny looking expression. I just was like in awe of everything that had just happened. And yeah, so I scooped him up, and they helped me move on to my back, and we sat like that. And they gave me some blankets to keep him warm. And it took a little longer for my placenta to come out this time. It took about 30 minutes or so. But we did wait for the cord to stop pulsing and before we cut it. And he nursed right away. He cried a lot, lots of crying. From the time that we got to the hospital, like pulled up to when he was born, was only 50 minutes. So it happened fast.
Less than an hour. Yes.
Yeah. And the pushing was much faster than the first time with my water intact. Yeah. So that was the big, this is so different for me.
Yeah. And I mean, for sure. Right. Like second babies and all that. But at the same time with this one, you were just going with what your body was saying.
Mm-hmm.
You weren't, you know, it wasn't that somebody said, okay, do this now. Or, you know, there's a little bit of a lip, I'll hold it. And can you push?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And have that sort of be the way that pushing started.
Mm-hmm.
And you being tired also plays a part, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I listened to that episode that you have with Wapio after I had him. And I just loved listening to that episode because when she was talking about lips and, you know, a true cervical lip versus, I guess, not a true one, and listening to your body. And I thought, well, I feel like that's what happened with us.
Yeah. And I find that, I mean, we've got this sort of imaginary boundary of I have to wait till I'm 10 and then somebody needs to give me permission to push. And there's a clear shift in gears of like before and after this moment. And truthfully, mm-hmm. that's made up. Like mm-hmm. your body doesn't care. It just does its own thing to your body. It's all part of the physiology. And as things progress, it shifts. Like it does have that, you know, the uterus is pulling up and pulling up and pulling up until it's more than open, but really has gone all the way as high as it's going to go and then switches to pushing baby down. So right. how the uterus moves is different for sure. And it seems like you felt that shift this time, whereas last time, maybe you didn't feel it because there were other, like you were more in thinking brain and other things were telling you what to do.
Right. Yeah. Very possible. Yeah.
Yeah. And from talking to Wapio and doing births and stuff on my own, I try to get rid of that boundary. And say, you actually don't have to do anything. You don't have to wait for a moment to happen to then switch and start doing that. You just keep doing what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And your body's going to tell you when you need to do something different. Mm-hmm. Right? And that's sort of that difference of like, because if you start analyzing, is this pressure? Is it constant pressure? Do I feel like I have to? You're thinking about it. And right, you don't birth right. with your brain. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's awesome that you had both experiences, though, I don't know if you think the first one was awesome, but that you had to compare and to see the difference.
Definitely. Yeah. I love both of them. They're different, but similar. And the change in the pushing for me was, it was really neat to feel my body doing it. You know, I mean, I was working with my body, but my body was definitely like pushing him out. Mm-hmm. It felt really good.
Yeah.
Compared to the first.
Yeah. It's getting that, being able to let that fetal ejection reflex happen. It seems that's what you felt.
Yeah, I think I did. I mean, it was night and day difference. And yeah, no, I mean, now it sounds weird, but it felt good. I enjoyed it, and it was still work, but it was good work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, it sounds. I love these are fun. I love listening to fun stories like this. I find like, oh yeah, I just had like, and by that I mean when they flow. That's what it is. It's flowing stories.
Yeah.
That you're just there for the ride and going with it. Like you didn't have to really make things happen.
Right. Yeah, I know. I've felt very fortunate that both of my births have been extremely smooth. No complications, you know, and I was just kind of along for the ride.
Yeah. So how was postpartum with this one?
Postpartum was very similar with both. My babies are colicky. they're very alert newborns. They're not like sleepy little newborns. They are for about 5 to 7 days and then they really wake up, and they were extremely similar. Lots of, you know, they wouldn't even cry in the evenings. It was all day crying. And so I kind of would just have to figure out what worked the first time. My son would really only sleep in the ergo. So it's hard when you reach a point where your babies only sleep a certain way. I mean, they wouldn't fall asleep nursing. You know, I couldn't bounce, rock, sway, you name it. I tried it. And so with my first, he only fell asleep in the ergo. And that's really hard when, you know, you want to take a nap too, and you can't because you have a baby sleeping on you. So that was a challenge. And then with my second, also very similar, but this time I had a toddler as well. And so I think my postpartum with him was even harder because I did have two kids and I had to deal with a colicky baby and a toddler. And he actually didn't like baby wearing. I tried, but he just did not like it. And so the only thing that would semi work for him was swaddling and bouncing on a birth ball. And so we did a lot of that. And yeah, they're, you know, like with time, it's just time. They need some around four. Both of my kids are about 4 or 5 months before things start to get a little easier.
And I think that's great for listeners to hear, as hard as it is, right? Because when you're in it, in the craziness of a colicky baby in and out for days on end, or a baby that's so fussy or higher needs or whatever it is, it's like, is this ever going to get better?
Mm-hmm. I know. Yeah. It's so hard. Even when you're in it, even the second time around, I was like, okay, I know things are going to get better eventually, but I want them better right now. but again, it is. It's just time. And they do get better.
So is there anything from birth and postpartum at any point really that you would do different if you had another one?
I really think, I mean, if you can enlist the help of family, friends, you know, neighbors, anybody really. It's being a military family makes it especially challenging because we don't have our family nearby. But then the military community is also very close. So there's a lot of people willing to help because they're all in the same boat. But yeah, I mean, just don't be afraid to ask for a little help, whether, you know, even from your partner, especially, you know, even if it's just an hour or something, just to get a little break. Mm-hmm. Because when you're in it and, you know things are going to get better eventually, you still need to take care of yourself and give yourself grace. You know, I mean, it's at the time I felt so bad for my toddler because he wasn't getting hardly any attention from me. He was watching too much TV because I was dealing with his brother. And I felt so bad, but I did the best I could. And I don't think we need to be so hard on ourselves. You know, he's a great little boy. He wasn't harmed by the couple of months that mommy was dealing with his brother, and whom he loves, by the way. They have the cutest little relationship. So,
yeah, and know that you're doing a good job, and especially take care of yourselves. Like, that's important, especially when it's hard and you're the primary caregiver, which usually the birthing person is during those mm-hmm. first few months, especially if you're nursing, right? Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. yeah, no, I love that. Thank you so very much for sharing your stories today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Mighty Ones, find the in-depth show notes for this episode at birthful.com, where you can also learn more about me, the show, Patreon member benefits, send me messages, and more. And if you want to hear more about April's pushing stages, along with all the things that she's doing differently to prepare for her upcoming third birth, then you should join us over at the Birthful Patreon, where you'll get the extra audio content for this episode, as well as ad-free episodes and more of my thoughts and musings when you become an official Birthful supporter. Find out more at patreon.com/birthful. And if what you want to do is get ready for life with a newborn, then go to birthfulcourses.com and sign up for my Thrive with Your Newborn online postpartum preparation classes. This episode was produced by me and made possible by you, those amazing Birthful Patreon supporters, and the wonderful people at Third Love and Miro. Go to thirdlove.com/birthful for 15% off your first perfectly fitting bra purchase, and go to mymiro.com/birthful and use the code birthful for 50% off your first order. The title song for this podcast is Vivace by Kevin McLeod, and the sponsorship song is Air Hockey Saloon by Chris Zabriskie. Find them both at freemusicarchive.org. Also, the Birthful Podcast is part of the Parents on Demand Network, a network of podcasts focused on parents. Download the free Parents on Demand app on Apple and Android for easy on-the-go listening. I'm Adriana Lozada. Please join me next week when I'll be talking to another maternity pro to inform your intuition here at the Birthful Podcast. Thanks so very much for listening. This episode is copyright 2019 by Adriana Lozada.